Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and before I introduce today's guest, I just want to share a couple updates with you, particularly around the Wellbeing Wizard tool, which is coming along really, really well. We're in the testing phase at the moment, and it's really exciting because we've been able to build an AI wellbeing tools to help teachers teach wellbeing to students, but also help wellbeing leaders create resources and lessons and games and activities for teachers to teach their students, if that's part of your role. Also to help pastoral care leaders create lessons and activities and games for the pastoral care teachers or the homeroom teachers, who is a requirement to teach those lessons or those activities as well in that pastoral care time. Now, what we've been able to do is because ChatGPT is obviously available, we've constrained it really, really well, purely for wellbeing education in schools. Now, that's really exciting. So keep an eye out for it. We're going through the testing phase, as I mentioned at the moment, and it's not far off launching. Now, just one more thing before we get into the episode. I'd love for you to go over to the platform that you're listening to this on. If you can give us a 5-star review, if you think you are getting value from these episodes, because what it'll do will help us reach more people, and hopefully more people will get value from these episodes as well. Okay, so I want to get into today's episode. Now, I'm really excited to have Damien Porter as our guest today. Now, Damien is a really passionate disability advocate with 47 years of lived experience. So he's a proud father of three young people, which two of them have a disability themselves. Now, why I wanted to get Damien on today, and we've just been connected recently, is to talk about particularly how we can include young people with disabilities in mainstream schools where we can, and the benefit of that particularly for the young person who has a disability. So how do we do that, the benefits of it? And also, we want to talk about, I guess, misconceptions around schools or educators have about including and accessibility for young people within mainstream schools as well. So we'll address that. And also, when a young person with a disability finishes schools, what happens next? So that school to work transition phase, I wanted to dive into that because it's a really important conversation, inclusion. And I think there's no one better to talk about this than with someone with lived experience like Damien. So without further ado, we'll get right into the episode. Damien, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure, mate. And I really wanted to have you on. We got connected recently. And one of the reasons why I did really want to get you on is because I'm really big on inclusion. And I think hearing it from someone who has lived experience like yourself, and you have children who with lived experience as well, and there's no better person than to learn from than other people that live with experience. So really excited to have you on today, and we're going to focus particularly on young people with disabilities in schools, and we'll get into some questions about that really soon. But first of all, could you just share a little bit about your background and what you're up to today, or not exactly in this minute, but what you're up to in life in general at the moment?
Yeah, sure. Well, again, thanks for inviting me on. I don't know if you know, but I've actually been running a podcast myself for the past couple of years called The Ability Podcast with Damo and Eddie. It's on YouTube and Spotify. We're not recording at the moment because I've moved on from a previous job, and that has made it just a little bit harder to find the time in both our schedules to, you know, do those videos. But, you know, that was fun. We had Bill Shorten on there for one of our episodes, which was amazing. I never expected to get someone like him on there so soon, you know, so early on in our journey. I think it was probably like episode 6. I've never been so nervous in my life, actually. And we were told, you know, you've got 15 minutes, that's all you get, blah, blah, blah. And he ended up speaking to us for like 43 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so made me feel like we were doing a good job and he wanted to stay longer and, answer more of our questions. And he gave Adelaide a bit of shit, about all our roadworks and, how they just never seem to be finished. So that was fun. But yeah, I guess back to me, I was actually 47 yesterday.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Thank you. I've had a disability my whole life. I was born with a disability called dystrophic dysplasia, which is a form of dwarfism. So, for the people that are listening, I'm about 3 foot 2. I'm just a dwarf, but I can't walk. I'm in a wheelchair. All my legs are bent at the knees and at the hips. So if you were to visualize that, I'm pretty much in a permanent sitting position. But when you sit on a chair and your hips are out the front and your knees are down, that's how my legs are all the time. I'm married, I've been with my wife for coming up 22 years.
Well done.
Yep, thank you. That's a challenge in itself.
Yeah.
I've got 3 kids. My daughter is 18 in November coming up. My son, well, my first son, he will be 16 in November, and my youngest is 12 in July. And my wife also has a disability. She's got cerebral palsy. My 15-year-old son is autistic, level 2 with ADHD, and auditory processing disorder. He's on the good end of autism. I think his ADHD is probably harder to manage than his autism. But he's a good kid. He's a genius when it comes to music. He'll play guitar and just play any song you ask him to play.
Wow.
Within 5 minutes of listening to the song, he'll be playing it. That's his, I guess, autistic niche. How they all seem to find something they're really good at. And
That's unbelievable.
yep, guitar and piano are his little, perfect qualities, I guess. And my youngest boy, he was born, and I hate to use the word normal, he was born normal, but when he was 6 months old, he contracted pneumococcal meningitis.
Oh, wow.
Yep, he actually died 3 times while he was in hospital.
Oh.
His infection levels in his blood were 295, and you're clinically dead at 300.
God.
So that was, the worst time for any parent. He went between two hospitals. At one point, we had the hospital chaplain come in to talk to us. And, that's always that discussion that no parent ever wants to have. Was probably the hardest day of our life, really. And then, you move fast forward to now, and he's got a cochlear implant on his left ear and a hearing aid in his right ear. So his left ear is completely dead, and his right ear is probably at about 50% hearing loss. But academically, he's above national standards for everything except for mathematics.
Unbelievable.
So like his spelling, his word pronunciation, his sentence forming, everything is way above national average. So, and that's just thanks to, I guess basically all the therapy that we've received for him, via the NDIS and, through, I guess, a little bit of hard work and persistence from us as well.
Absolutely. That's an amazing like story, and it's so good that he's doing really well, and the other kids are as well. So I wouldn't mind just transitioning into that now, Damien. Just asking you about what are the biggest academic and social benefits of inclusion, or sorry, inclusive education for students with disabilities who are capable of participating in mainstream schooling? What are some of those like, I guess, those benefits of that?
I think that's endless benefits, really. I was up until the age of 5, I was sort of, relegated, I guess, to being stuck with Nobita Children's Services. Back then they were the Crippled Children's Association. And even before that, I was relegated to the Woodville Spastic Center, and back then, in the 70s, people like me were pretty much put in a home and, forgotten about. I had the benefit, I guess. I was put into a foster home at the age of 6 months. I still see my biological family. It was just a really bad circumstance at the time that placed me into foster care because I was supposed to be dead before the age of.
Oh, well.
I was not meant to be, or I was certainly not meant to be here today, that's for sure.
So, can I just ask, how have you done that? Like, if that's what you were told, how have you been able to, I guess, continue living?
The older I get, the harder it is mentally
Yep.
because I kind of, I've had a lot of friends pass away over the years as well. It is hard not to think about. There are some days where I feel like I'm sort of just waiting to punch my ticket. Having friends die around you all the time that have had disabilities, I almost feel like I'm just, like waiting at the doctor's surgery with a number on my ticket, waiting to be called. I mean, that's a fairly deep sort of thought, which I tend to steer myself away from as much as I can.
Oh, well, mate, well, it's inspiring, like, to just hear that little story that you just shared then. And yeah, it's amazing and that you're doing so well. And yeah, that makes, yeah, I know, it just sends shivers down my spine. And yeah, it's very inspiring, mate. So I really appreciate
I
you.
guess, like for everyone, the older we get, the more we do think about our children when we're older, what happens if I'm not around when they're older, and I've always just had that little thought in the back of my head that if I can at least make it to the point where my kids are all old enough to survive on their own, I've done a good job and I'm happy with that.
Absolutely. So I guess, I mean, this is a bit of a, I guess, unannounced type of question, but what, I guess there's been a lot of change since you went to school and the where we're at now. So I guess you've seen the whole, like, over the last 40 odd years, you've seen this big journey. Is things like changed for the better? Is there still work to do?
To some degree, for the better, yes, but I think the more people think about it, sometimes they go overboard and oversaturate things and over. I don't know. Sometimes I think simplicity can be better. I don't know if that makes sense to
It
me.
does. Yep.
Like I was saying before, I was lucky enough to be put in a really, really good foster home with the most amazing woman you will ever meet. Like in her 45 years of fostering, she fostered over 600 children.
Oh, wow.
And that could be just for a day, it could have been for a week, could have been 6 months. And then in her 45 years, she had four of us that were in her care from baby till the time we reached 18. But yeah, in that 45 years, she had over 600 children coming
That's
through her door
incredible.
and out. The regular ones that were there all the time, we saw some, pretty bad shit over the time. And, we saw children that were put in her care that had been physically abused, sexually abused. Their mum had been picked up, out cold in their car from drugs and just some really, really bad stuff. It makes me appreciate the life that I have a hell of a lot, and the family and the children and the wife that I have, because I have seen the worst of it. But she was an absolute magician when it came to advocating and making sure that, I wasn't placed at a special school and I went to mainstream school, from reception. right through to year 12 until I graduated high school.
Oh, brilliant. And she like fought for that, for your that
Well,
opportunity.
yes, because she knew, I had the capacity to be able to cope. And I feel that because of her, it's made me who I am today.
I loved how you just like mentioned about then about like you were like grateful for that opportunity like to be with her because you saw so many other things. Like that must have been really challenging, and obviously I'm sure that as we all do, but you've obviously gone through some challenges yourself. And just to see that outlook, like thinking about the positive things that happen, that's an amazing mindset, mate. I really appreciate you sharing that and being able to
Yeah,
think like that as well.
thank you. And it helps me to advocate for my own children now as well.
Yeah,
My
absolutely.
daughter, she's in year 12. She's probably only got 10 weeks left of school, and she's graduating with, A's and B's across the board. I'm really proud of her for that. And she wants to be a police officer next year. She's had a job as a swimming instructor at our local pool for the last 12 months, so even she's doing jobs that wants to help,
Yeah, absolutely.
and yeah, for my son that's in year 10, he's struggling big time, academically, and we're always advocating for him, we're always in contact directly with the teachers, As you can't always rely on the school to do the tasks that you need, I guess. We know our son better than anybody else. And, we have constant contact with his teachers all the time.
Brilliant.
This year, he's probably doing better than what he ever has.
That's fantastic. Mate, that yeah, that's really good to hear. And I think that's really important what you just mentioned as well. Like you having that communication with the teachers yourself, because sometimes, like I mean, I've been on both sides. So I've been a teacher, but then I've been outside doing what I'm doing now, with Growing with Gratitude. So going into schools and doing programs. And sometimes I think we can put too much pressure, or not maybe not pressure, but too many high expectations on teachers. But when the teachers and families are working together, I think that's when the best impact can happen for the young person, without a doubt.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And yourself, especially in today's society, teachers are under so much pressure. I would never want to become a teacher.
That's right.
Especially now, they've literally got no rights anymore. They've got no, like, they're not even allowed to stand up to the kids anymore and say, "Hey, you're being a jerk. Cut it out," And my son, like I was mentioning earlier, he is autistic, but he's at the end of the scale where, he's not naughty at school, he's not disruptive, he just gets distracted really easily, and he's very making himself look like he's doing work, where in actual fact he's not. So he gets very much lost in the shuffle. That's where our advocating comes in handy, because make sure that if he hasn't handed in any work, the teachers are always going to come to us straight away and tell us, and then we can make sure that he gets it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just on that, like from I guess from when you went to school and where it is now, what we'll do a positive and then maybe room for improvement. So what are schools doing really well at the moment to include young people with disabilities in mainstream schooling?
Well, I think there's more disabled children in schools than what there's ever been. I think that in itself is a big bonus. Like I mentioned, I went through mainstream schooling for my entire school life. I only ever had, I'm gonna call them mainstream friends. I don't like these, able-bodied, whatever. My friends have always been quote unquote normal. And that's because I went through mainstream school. I had the same expectations placed on me that every other student had. I wasn't treated as the special kid. If I didn't do my work, then that was on me. That was my fault, just like every other kid. And in regards to today's society, it opens up so much more for disabled kids, not just academically, but socially and life skills, almost street smart skills as well. See how everyday kids operate and function. And if they pick up a few of their qualities, good or bad, then they're just being kids, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good. I'd love to hear that from yourself. And it seems like, I mean, from what I see, like I think that, I mean, every school's different. I think some schools really good at inclusion, and some have got some work to do. How do you think the best schools include, like, have they got extra staff? Have they got the facilities? How do we include, make sure that young people with disabilities get the most out of mainstream schooling?
I'm a really big supporter of inclusion as well. If I don't want like a classroom full of special needs kids, I think they should be split up into all the mainstream classes, because then you're not stereotyping, you're not lumping all the kids in one special class, especially if they're capable of learning, put them in the mainstream classes. They're going to learn even more as well. Technology, I think, is a big plus, whether it be automatic doors, elevators, big screens that, maybe a visually impaired person can see properly. But at the end of the day, I think everybody just wants to be treated like every other kid. And that comes down to the understanding of the educators.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really, you make some really good points there. And I really like that one, how you said, if there are like a number of young people with disabilities and maybe special learning needs, like as you say, don't have them in one class, split them up. I love that idea. And as I said, I think some schools that do that really well, and others might have more of a class where they have the students with special needs or disabilities in that altogether.
Yeah.
But I think you make a really good point.
You don't want to lump them all in the one room. I mean, obviously, if they're quite serious intellectual disabilities, I can see why they would be all put into the one room. Because, A, if they are aware of their disability, you don't want to put them into a mainstream class. They might feel a bit inferior, I guess. But if the child is capable of learning, just because they've got CP or Down syndrome or autism or whatever, put them in a mainstream class. Just make sure they've got the right, SSO supports, I guess.
Absolutely. I was gonna you asked my next question there. I said, well, excuse me. I think it's really important to say put them in that mainstream class you said. And my next question was, how do we support those students? And I think that having that SSO or student, I know different states call it different things, but that student support person who can work with that the children if they need that extra help. Some might not, which is great, but some
Yeah.
might need that help. So if it's there, it's brilliant.
I had SSO support, for my whole journey. But it wasn't to help me with anything academically. It was literally to help me with things that I couldn't use my own arms for.
Got you.
Yeah, like taking down notes or getting my laptop out my bag, things like that. That's where I needed the SSO support.
Got you.
Whereas academically, I'd look at her sometimes and she
Yep,
raise her eyebrows and goes, "Mate, don't ask me. You're learning, not me." So I tried to occasionally get her to answer a few questions here and there, but
absolutely. That's right.
gotta make the most of it while I can.
100%. That's a great idea. Now, Damien, I just want to transition a bit because you've got a daughter who's about to finish school, and you've got another one probably a couple of years out from finishing. So, how do we as a society prepare young people with disabilities for employment after school? And I guess, what are the major gaps in that transition currently?
I believe the number one way to make them ready is actually to make them feel like they're worthy. And by worthy, I mean, just because they are in a wheelchair doesn't mean they have to go and work at a sheltered workshop. That doesn't mean anything. Or just because they're Down syndrome doesn't mean they have to go and start mowing lawns for Bedford Industries, because obviously if they're in mainstream schooling, they're certainly capable of a hell of a lot more. So it's, teaching them to advocate for themselves and teaching them self-worth as well. Ultimately, that is the first thing that needs to happen with children with disability at school before they leave school.
And how do you think we go at the moment as a society with that?
Yeah, I don't think we're doing so well, but that's I think that's more of a government educational problem, not teachers and the people that run the school. I think whoever writes the script, for all our teachers and for all the people that run the school, I think they need to be more responsible for those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess how would that ideal pathway look like? If you were in charge, what would you put in place?
Probably someone, and I'm not volunteering, by the way, but probably someone with my extensive lived experience, almost them in a position where someone like me can have a say and advise, like an advisory role, I guess, almost like what the NDIS are doing, with having more people on their board that actually have disabilities.
Interesting. That's a good point because I think and I think that happens a lot in society in general. Quite often people have good intentions and that might be on different boards, but we forget about the people who we're actually catering for. Like just another example, sometimes you'll go into a school and they've just had all these redevelopments. And someone, on that design board, there hasn't even been a teacher in there. So the designers have just gone ahead and designed it. Not all the time, but I've heard lots of stories where the designers didn't actually consult anyone and just gone and designed it. And there's been all these issues because it wasn't designed for, I guess, practical use for teachers.
Yes.
But if you've got those people who, with the lived experience, who are doing whatever you're talking about in different situations every day, that's when the big changes and I guess key or things can happen.
That happens with disability access every day anyway.
Oh, that's yes.
Not just, where a classroom's been built and no teachers have been advised on what they want. This happens every day in the disability community with disability access. My local shopping centre, the centre management won't even talk to me anymore because I cost them $35,000 a couple of years ago due to them not building. Well, they built a real fangle dangle disability access public toilet. I went there and I couldn't even open the door to get in. And it was quite funny how it happened. So I went home and I put up a post, just a post on Facebook as people do these days, with photos backing up what I said. Just, I wasn't abusive. I wasn't, one of those, old men shaking my fist at the clouds type situation. But, I put up and said, it's all well and good to build all these public amenities that are for, disability access. But if only 3 out of 10 people can actually access the facility, you're pretty much alienating 70% of your disability community. That I just shared that with my local Facebook group, which is like my family and friends, which is 97 people. That's how big my friend list is. And then the next morning, I was getting a phone call from the ABC radio.
Oh, really?
I'm like, geez, that blew up overnight.
That's what.
And they wanted me on the radio, and they interviewed me twice in 3 days,
Wow.
talking about it. And then the day after that, I get a phone call from the center management of the shopping center, because they, of course, refused to talk to ABC Radio. And he said to me, "We took it under the advisement of the architect that designed the toilet, and as far as we were told, basically all the teeth were crossed and the dyes were dotted, the eyes were dotted." And I'm like, "Well, I'm telling you right now that I have absolutely no hope in hell of accessing that toilet, and I shouldn't have to take a support worker everywhere I go just to open a door."
Exactly.
So after further deliberation, they decided to put a button on the wall outside the toilet and add a motor to the door to open the door. And in
Which,
my opinion, in this day and age, it should be there anyway.
yeah, that's what I was going to say, and it should have been there in the first place. Now
So
that,
that
yeah.
goes back to what you were saying about the education and the designing of classrooms and stuff. This center management guy only took the advisement of someone that's got a uni degree in architect. And yeah, sure, they covered majority of the disability specs, but it wasn't all above where it should have been. And my wife, like I said to you earlier, she's got cerebral palsy, but she can walk, and when we go out, she uses a wheelchair. And she's got really good arm strength. Like, I don't know, picture a basketball player in a wheelchair. That's what she's with her arms. And even she couldn't open the door.
God.
What does that tell you?
And I think that you make a great point. And going back to the point that you made before about having lived experienced people on boards, no matter what industry or what the situation is, so important, and particularly for people with disability. And like that could have been solved if somebody with a disability was on that design panel, if that's what it's
Yes.
called.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I just to add to the door that they installed, they had the braille, for a visually impaired person. I think by law it's meant to be at about 5 foot on the door or on the wall next to the toilet. They had the braille board to say that it was a toilet, measured at 6'2" no, 6'2"
Oh
above
God.
the top of the door.
Oh, that's not ideal either.
Like, I'm sorry, but if you're only 5'2" and you've got a vision impairment, how the hell are you going to know that that's a toilet?
Exactly. God. So interesting, isn't it? And that I guess from me, well, sorry, from my point of view, just learning about these little things as well. And again, it comes down to communicating with people with lived experience. And I think we can learn a lot about that in schools as well, about communicating with, I guess, even the young person themselves, but also their parents who live with the students, but also people with lived experience who have maybe gone through like school in a wheelchair before, and get them to come back to the school and talk about what they can do better and making improvements. That's what I'm just sort of thinking out loud.
I think even teachers themselves need to be, they need to have meetings with people like myself,
Good point.
learn how to approach different situations in the classroom.
No, if we,
I can't think of any situations that would arise right now, but
yeah.
I'm sure things arise all the time when you're teaching a person with disability.
Absolutely.
Teachers that aren't used to that sort of thing are going to be put in those situations where they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, for sure. If we put that word out, Damien, about you're available to go out to schools and talk, you might
Absolutely, go for it. Never mind.
you might be booked out for a year.
Well, I still have my ABN number from when I was running my own business, so I can still be hired for advocacy work if it's out there.
Absolutely. Well, definitely, we'll put your like a contact email or something that like something like that on the show notes. And if people want to reach out and have you come out to their school, you're based in Adelaide, and come out to do a staff session or something like that. That'll be a brilliant thing.
Even just talking to classrooms full of kids.
Yep.
I've done it before, and I pretty much start the whole session just by telling them that no question is a stupid question.
That's a good
And
way to do it.
I get questions like, do you sleep in your chair? How do you go to the toilet? And I don't mind that because they're only learn, that's how they learn. They don't ask, they will never ever know.
And I think that builds empathy as well.
It does.
And that's I think that's a really important point. Like I'm big on empathy, like teaching young people it. Because I think it's a skill that can be learned, and just asking questions and getting to know other people is a great way to build that empathy. Because, yeah, you're right. People would have lots of questions.
I did a little seminar probably a couple of years ago with a NDIS provider talking about the importance of good relationships between providers and, the people that they work with. But at the very, very beginning of that seminar, I handed out a piece of paper to everybody, and because nobody there knew who I was prior to the seminar, I got them to write down what their opinion of what my life looked like before I actually told them. So, do I live in a home? Do I live with my parents? Or do I live with my wife and kids? And out of 20 people, only 3 people wrote down wife and kids. The rest were in a group home or in an NDIS facility or, living with my parents. It was quite, and what I did at the end of the seminar, I read out all the answers.
Oh, yep.
I just read out all the answers. Looking around the room, I could tell who wrote what just by the looks on their face.
That would have been so. You would have had a bit of a giggle, I think.
I did, one of the pieces of paper, one of them just wrote piss head. I was happy, I was happy to accept that one. It's good because it teaches people not to assume.
Yep, that's so true. That's
Don't
a really interesting
assume anything
source.
about me because I guarantee what I'm going to tell you will be nothing compared to who I actually am.
That's interesting. Well, I wonder, I mean, I guess, yeah, that's really interesting you say that. And I mean, in schools, like students might have, like if they've got a young person with a disability in their class, they might want to know a bit more about their situation, but they might feel a bit
Apprehensive to us.
exactly. So what's something like a class could do, or I guess if a teacher's got that situation in the classroom, in a mainstream classroom, what's some strategies they could use?
See, it is, you don't really want to introduce the disabled child to the class. Like, hello everyone, little Johnny's joining us today. He has a disability. Please be respectful, blah, blah, blah. I don't think little Johnny needs that type of intro, but just maybe question time or when little Johnny does join the classroom, maybe just have a, I don't know, it's a hard one, I guess,
It
because
is.
it depends on the age of the class that the child is in and also the type of disability.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a really tricky one. That's why I ask, because from a educator point of view, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is a hard one because you don't want to upset anyone. You don't want to stereotype or put a label over
Correct.
on Johnny either. You just want to fit in just like everybody else. Because if a Chinese child joins the class, it's quite obvious that he's Asian and maybe his English isn't that great. A lot of people have disabilities that you don't even see. Like my disability is obvious. I sit in an electric wheelchair. So there are those disabilities where it is even hard to know what they've got. And
Yes.
you want to introduce that child the same way you would with little Asian boy as well. Just
Yeah.
sit them down and get on with the class.
Absolutely. So I think that's a really good answer. And I think a lot of teachers probably need to hear that. And that was good to hear that
I think
from me as well.
just simplify it. It doesn't have to be awkward. It doesn't have to be cringe or anything that needs to be over-explained or talked about. Because hopefully you'd think that the disability is quite obvious anyway.
Yeah,
If it's not
absolutely.
obvious, then there's no need to mention it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, mate. Mate, this has been a brilliant conversation, and hopefully teachers or schools or educators will be able to reach out to you to come out and talk to their schools, because or if it's in the classroom or a staff or whoever it might be. But I think they'll get a lot of value out of it, and probably there's a lot of questions that they aren't sure of. And I know that I've got a lot of questions that I asked some of them today, and you gave some brilliant responses. So I think they will learn a lot from you.
I'll happily chat with you more, off the microphone if you wanted to as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just quickly back to the education of children. I've had children look at me my entire life. From the age that they're old enough to walk and form their own opinions, I've had children look at me forever. I actually get really, 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 really pissed off when a child is staring at me, but their parent comes along, grabs the child by the collar of their shirt, and drags them away, scolding them for staring at me or anything like that. Because when you're 4 years old, that child doesn't know a damn thing about me, even about disability, but then on the other side of the coin, sometimes I have parents come up to me and say, "Hey, is it all right if my kid asks you a question?" Absolutely. Ask whatever you want. And I would much rather that approach, is what happens to that little child that is always dragged away from that situation when that child starts school and little Johnny is suddenly in that child's class as well.
Yes.
And then, little Johnny wants to make friends, but the poor child who's been dragged away his whole life says, "Oh, my mum said I'm not allowed to talk to you." Because basically that's what's always happened to him. Therefore, both kids are missing out.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. That's really interesting. That
That makes sense. Like,
does totally.
it's education at home as well. If a child wants to look at me, I always wave and say hi. Nine times out of ten, the parent will look back at me and, "Oh, say hi to the man."
No, it's really interesting you say that. And I think that's a really important lesson there that you've just explained as well. And I like how you explain that if the parent is pulling like the young person or 4-year-old away from looking at you, you're right. Like that's gonna like impact their future relationships.
Yes, they will grow up thinking they're not allowed to look at me or talk to me.
Yeah, no,
Rather than,
glad that you shared that. It's really important.
I'd rather that child know that it is okay to stare and ask questions if they want. Everyone in my position doesn't have the same outlook as I do. There are assholes out there, but assholes out there in any capacity.
That's true.
So you've got to take the good with the bad. But I always know that, if a child looks at me, I will always smile. I will always say hello, because I know that at the end of the day, it's helping them, not me.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, I've really loved the conversation today, Damien. I really appreciate your time. And we'll put in the show notes where people can reach out. Have you got somewhere where people that you can announce it verbally as well? Where can people find you?
The best place would probably be on LinkedIn. I do have Facebook. It is locked to private, but they can add me or message me on there if they want. But
That's LinkedIn, Damien Porter.
Just Damien Porter. Damien with an E.
Yep, A-N on the end. Yep, Damien Porter. Yep. Connect on LinkedIn and reach out, and we might put our email address in the show notes as well, if you like, or definitely put their LinkedIn.
Well, when you stop recording, I can give you my email address.
Sounds good. All right, Damon, well, really appreciate your time, and I know I learned a lot today, and I'm sure people listening will as well. Thank you very much.
Opportunity.
No worries.